This is the Feminem Podcast, the official podcast of Feminem, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I'm Jenny Beck-Esme, editor-in-chief of Feminem. I'm really excited to bring you our next Fix 18 content. This is from Dr. Jen Gunter. It's called Taking on Pseudoscience and Patriarchy. Some of you might know Dr. Gunter. She's an OBGYN and pain medicine physician, and she also did a fellowship in infectious disease. She started her own blog in 2011 to, as she put it, clean up her corner of the internet, because it takes accurate information to be an empowered patient. Her motto is, come for the sex, stay for the science, come for the science, stay for the sex. She writes a column for the New York Times and has written for a diverse range of publications, including The New Republic, The Cut, The Hill, Self, and The Guardian. She has been called Twitter's gynecologist, and she's one of the most outspoken women's health advocates in our country. Her fight for facts has also earned her the title of Gwyneth Paltrow's arch nemesis, which I think is pretty funny. So her talk is about taking on pseudoscience and the patriarchy, and I think you're really going to enjoy it.
Okay, so how did I get involved in all of this? I sometimes forget my own origin story, and so I have to remind myself, because sometimes, you know, I get carried away and make things up, and then that would be totally against my brand. So my story started because the people who have the most complicated pregnancies are OBGYNs, right? So, and any of you who've read any of my stuff, have any of you read anything I've written? Okay, so you know that I talk about my two sons, but actually I was pregnant with triplets. And I delivered very prematurely, and one of my sons died, and my other two were in the intensive care unit for a very long period of time. And on top of it, because being 783 grams wasn't enough of a challenge, my son Oliver had pulmonary valve stenosis and an ASD and also bad bronchopulmonary dysplasia. And you think, you know, the worst thing you're going to hear in your life is that your 783-gram kid needs a cardiac procedure, and then they tell you he's too small to have it. And so, you know, he eventually got it and eventually had his ASD closed and all this stuff. And late one night, I was, you know, in a fit of 3 a.m. Googling because things were not going well. And I went down a rabbit hole of stem cell clinics. And I thought, if I could think about getting a totally useless and probably harmful stem cell treatment for my kid's heart, how would everybody else deal with that information? And so that's when I decided that when my kids were through with all their pressing health issues, that I would try to clean up my little corner of the internet. And this is where I am. So along the way, working in sort of the field of pseudoscience, I started to realize that there was a significant overlap with the patriarchy. And I really got, you know, really obsessed with it. So look at these words up here. Pure, wholesome, natural, fresh, ancient, clean. You know, what could I be talking about? Well, I could be talking about a toxin-free tampon, whatever a toxin is. I could be talking about a family planning app. I could be talking about an abstinence-only contraception program from the Susan B. Anthony list, who are the literal handmaidens of the patriarchy. Or I could be talking about the criteria for America's next virgin bride, which, if we're not all careful, is actually going to be a reality show. So I started realizing that there was really a significant overlap between these two things. And so I started to wonder, which came first, patriarchy or the pseudoscience? Well, obviously it's patriarchy, because that's the original sin. But how did this medical misinformation start? And it turns out that if you go all the way back to the very first physicians, to the time of Galen and Hippocrates and all these old dudes, you know, they spent hours dissecting male cadavers and penises, and there's pages and pages and pages devoted to the glory of the penis and, you know, like nothing to the clitoris, because what is that anyway, right? And it's really sad. You think, God, who was married to Galen? Her life must have sucked. But anyway, so you think about it. So what happened was these ancient physicians spoke to midwives and women, and whatever they thought about their anatomy and their body, these ancient male physicians were like, yeah, that sounds good. And they wrote it down, or they're like, yeah, I don't think so. And they changed it. So it's kind of like the original mansplaining, right? So For years and millennium, basically, that was the knowledge that women had. So they really didn't have any other choice because the culture of vaginal shame prevented them from getting exams. Think about it. Your purity was worth more than your health. 4 millimeters of hymen was worth more than you being alive, right? So women couldn't have exams, they couldn't have any kind of treatment. And so they had to do best with, you know, witches and midwives and people making up poultices with fenugreek and garlic and, you know, mustard seed and stuffing it up there and hoping things worked out. But, you know, I often think, like, what would those ancient women have done if they'd actually had proper medical education, if they'd had knowledge, if they'd been allowed to go to school, right? We wonder that. So the culture of vaginal shame is still with us now. We've promoted it a lot in medicine. If you think about all of these ads from, you know, the Lysol ads about douching because, you know, she was a jewel of a wife except for one problem, her skanky vagina, right? I mean, vaginal neglect is not a thing, but it sells. It sells in the same way that, you know, women have, when you talk about, there's a recent study that just came out about epigenetic changes, right? And how if your parents were in a war and they had famine, or I think they did the study actually with survivors of families who'd been in prisoner of war camps during the Civil War and people who hadn't. So both had been exposed to famine, but one group had come from a family that had, you know, had been in a terrible prisoner of war camp. And they found that there were actually more diseases in the people who'd had this previous trauma, so that trauma can be generational. And I often wonder how much trauma we all carry from these generations upon generations upon generations of vaginal shame. And people obviously capitalize on it. They sell these products. And these products, when you look at these things, are no different from what Gwyneth Paltrow sells or Dr. Oz sells or everybody else. Everybody's trying to capitalize on vaginal shame because it sells. And I'm not having any of it. So the problem, though, the problem is that pseudoscience doesn't just start and stop with the vagina. When you go onto these sort of pseudoscience websites, and when you look at, you know, all of the apple cider vinegar stuff, you also find a plethora of medical conspiracy theories. And there, did you know that 37% of Americans believe in a medical conspiracy theory? We have a huge problem with science illiteracy in this country. And I honestly think that if we ever want to get anywhere, that's one of the things we have to change. Because people can't possibly hope to understand the concepts of gun violence research if they don't understand anything about research or science at all, right? So all of the things people have spoken about over these last 2 days that they want to achieve, we can't achieve that if we have a whole country of people who are basically illiterate scientifically. So medical conspiracy theories like fluoride is gonna kill you for I don't know what reason, but apparently it is, or the mercury in your fillings, I don't know, I've had mercury in my mouth since I was 5 and I'm okay. You know, vaccines causing autism, or that AIDS is a construct of big pharma. Right? You find these medical conspiracy theories on the site, and the problem is people get exposed to them. So they might show up because they're afraid of what they've been told about vaginal health, but they get exposed to medical conspiracy theories. And you say, okay, well, okay, like they see that once. Does that really matter? Well, considering our vaccination rates here for cervical cancer vaccine, right? I don't call it the HPV vaccine anymore, I call it the cervical cancer vaccine. People need to know they're turning down a cancer vaccine. It's something called the illusory truth effect. And what that means is, if you're exposed to something enough, the idea will stick. So think about our 24/7 news cycle. Think about all the Facebook feeds that come across, Instagram, Twitter, conversations in the hallway, Fox News, which is always on in the surgeon's lounge. What is up with that? I'm like, what is wrong with you surgeons? And, you know, so you're exposed to it all the time. And so people start to believe these things. And that's why we have counties that are taking out fluoride from their water. That's why we have people that refuse to believe in vaccines. That's why we have people taking supplements, right? $30 billion a year industry, even though they're very harmful, or at worst, or at best, they're not helpful at all. We need, these sites need conspiracy theories to churn the mechanism that sells things like supplements. So it's all very inbred. And I kind of have it summed up in this meme. I've only ever done one meme in my life, but this is it, right? So science is like, oh my God, what? And you know, I like in this meme specifically that both the science is a woman and also the snake oil is a woman. Because there are a lot of women profiting in the same way. Whether it's internalized patriarchy or whether they don't care and they're just making money, I don't know. But a lot of this pseudoscience is peddled by women. So it's important to call people out for what they do. So speaking of calling people out, the Jade Egg, which you should watch this space because there'll be something coming in the news about that shortly, but I can't tell you. So anyway, but you can say you heard it here. So this is the Jade Egg that's supposed to, you know, I don't know, harness lunar energy or something to make you a better woman. I'm not really sure. I missed that class in medical school. So this idea, you know, when I wrote about how useless and stupid the Jade Egg is, I was called out by Goop as being strangely confident. And the person that they, I know, right? The person they put up as being appropriately confident or being confident is a woman who has a degree from an institute that she founded. I'm like, wow, I could have done that for medical school. I could have just like started a medical school and given myself a degree. That would have been a lot easier, right? Except there's this thing called like ethics. So anyway, but it made me think that there's been this successful rebranding of modern medical advancements as evil. And it's really fascinating to me because I think about the woman in the bog making the poultice. You know, I think about her a lot, actually, this mythical sort of witch woman who may be sort of alive in the time of Camelot. And I talk to her and I say, well, what would you have done? And I think, you know, what would these women who made the best with what they had because they were denied education by men, right? So I could bring one of those women, you know, to my office and I could say, hey, so what do you do for trichomonas? And she'd say, well, what's trichomonas? Oh, when someone comes to you, that really nasty, funky green discharge. Oh, yeah, yeah, we mix up fenugreek and garlic and some moss and stuff it up there and send them on their way. Well, does it work? Well, I don't know, they don't come back. Oh, okay, maybe it's because the discharge from that is worse, so I don't really know. And I imagine what she would do if I showed her a microscope and showed her the microorganisms. And then if I said, I have these four pills, each one of them is 500 milligrams of metronidazole, and if your patient takes this all at once, that nasty green discharge is gonna go away. And she'd probably say, that's magic, oh my God, and I'd say, no, that's not magic, that's medicine. Right? How is that rebranded as evil? And how is putting garlic in your vagina branded as being empowerment? It's really incredible, the messaging. And so that's why I think, for me, that language matters so much. Whether you're using inappropriate terms to say toxins are clean, or when you're saying words like empowerment, or you're talking about how something works, it matters. And that's why I write, because I figure that I can reach a lot of people that way. You know, I was sitting in my office one day, and I'd probably told 15 people that month not to put yogurt in their vagina. I mean, and this myth has been around for ages. I mean, I started medical school in 1986, and people were putting yogurt in their vagina then. I mean, we know it's not the right thing to do. We've known this for a long time. Why is nobody listening? And I just thought after like this 15th, no, don't put it in there. I've got to get the message out a different way. And so that's, you know, cleaning up the internet, seeing how many people I could get to sooner. Because I always think, imagine a world where every single patient came into your emergency department or your pediatrics office or whatever office you have, and all they had was high quality medical information about their condition. Imagine if you didn't have to tell people that their supplements were useless because they were never taking it. So then you'd never see people with liver toxicity from taking too much vitamin A. Imagine if you never had to stop anyone from telling anybody about their smoking because no one ever smoked because people believed the science. Imagine if people came in saying, oh, there's both antibiotics and surgery for appendicitis. Well, I've read about both of that. Tell me a little bit about the risk benefits again. Imagine if every single patient came in and was well-informed with high-quality information. It would serve everybody. It would serve the patients. It would serve us. It would serve health insurers. It would serve the government. The only people it wouldn't serve are the people who make supplements and pharmaceuticals, and I don't really care about them, so that's okay. So I think it's really important for us to think about the fact that getting good information, good quality information out to people, the sooner we can, the better for everybody. Because in summary, I'd like to say that misinformation helps no woman. It's never helped anybody. And anytime you see misinformation, you know, we've talked a lot about advocacy here, and there's big things that you can do. You can get out and help people get to the polls. You can help people get to Washington. You can do advocacy in all kinds of ways. But you can also do advocacy one-on-one, and you can extend your privilege, and probably even less to your patients and more to your friends, and pass on information. And when you see people spreading bad information, step up and say, hey, you know what? Here's a better source for you. Because you don't want to tell people not to look. When people are looking for information, I equate that with them going to the library, and that's a good thing. I never want to tell anybody not to go to the library. But the problem is if they're just getting misinformation, it's like they're stopping at People Magazine and Us Weekly when there's all kinds of really good books further back. And so instead of telling them, don't go to the library, you want to say, hey, there's some really good stuff over there. So thank you, everybody, for coming. And I think that I'm probably at my 15 minutes. And so I want to have everybody end on time. But hopefully we'll do some questions afterwards. And thank you, everybody, for fighting the good fight.